The views and opinions expressed on this show are those of the sponsor, Gross & Schuster.
Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. It's the Pensacola Expert Panel. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. I'm joined on the phone by Terrence A. Gross of Gross & Schuster.
Yeah.
How are you doing this morning, sir?
Doing great, and we never have enough time, so I'm going to jump right into it. Most of the people out there know who I am, but I've been a lawyer here locally for 44 years. I've specialized in personal injury cases for about 40 years. And I have five offices throughout the Panhandle in Pensacola, Milton, Fort Walton, Crestview, and Navarre. And I have my three sons that are my law partners, and we just kind of ride the circuit handling personal injury claims. And every now and then, there's a case that's got to go to court. So now you got to go to court, and the first thing you do if you're going, you know, for a trial is pick a jury. And some of you out there have been subpoenaed for jury service, and you wonder, you know, what's going on? Why wasn't I picked? Why was I picked? And there is a lot of mystery. So I'm going to try to peel back the layers of the onion very quickly in this brief period that I have and explain what goes on. And I'm going to speak specifically about Escambia County because every county kind of does it differently. But in Escambia County, what they do now is they subpoena everybody on Monday mornings to serve as potential jurors for that week. It could be civil trials. It may be a personal injury case. It may be eminent domain. It could be a contract dispute, a condominium case, we don't know, or more than likely it's a criminal case because most of the jury trials are criminal. Very few are civil. So I would say if you asked our trial judges to give a percentile, I bet you they would tell you that 95% of the trials they sit on are criminal defendants and that only 5% are civil. With that being said, so they subpoena about 250, knowing that 50 probably won't come. Either they have trouble getting service, people move, people die. Some people call in and say, listen, I'm 8.5 months pregnant and I'm about to give birth any day now. Well, of course, they're not going to make you come to jury duty. And if you tell them your mother's on their deathbed and you want to be there, you know, every minute you can, of course, they're going to excuse you. So some people just actually call the clerk and are excused way before that day. And then some idiots fail to abide by the subpoena, and you are subpoenaed, and you could be actually be brought in and in some cases held in contempt of court for failure to appear when you were subpoenaed to do your civic duty. So anyway, so let's say 200 people now show up. So now you're put in this gigantic room together. And normally there used to be, I think there still is, some type of movie, just a movie about the civil system, a generic thing given people who haven't really had the experience, just the little do's and don'ts and what goes on behind the scenes. And then usually it may be the clerk of the court may come in and give a live 15-minute lecture as well, just explaining the process and whatever. So on any given Monday morning in Escambia County, there could be five or six judges that are looking to seat juries for their respective trials. And normally, and I'm not going to talk about a death penalty case, because a death penalty case could take the whole 200 people because it just, you need a lot more people due to, you know, people are opposed to death penalty, pro-death penalty, all that stuff. It's so many issues going on, but in your, like a generic, like car wreck case or a generic, you know, like a battery or a drug deal case or whatever it may be, usually about 30 people are brought in. And when they're brought into that judge's courtroom, it is very important for you to know this, that the bailiff takes charge. And this is preordained. This has nothing to do with anything with you, has nothing to do with your age or your political party or what sex you are or what kind of job you have, nothing. It's totally arbitrary like the lottery. It's just a number out of the box, but they'll seat the people usually in five rows of six. It just depends. Every courtroom is configured differently, but usually in our trial courtrooms, what I normally see is you'll have the jurors, you know, six on the front row and then another six. So you got five rows of six equals 30. Well, let me tell you something right up off the bat so you'll know this. If you're one of those people that end up in row six and there's only picking one trial, I will tell you 100% chance you are not going to be on the jury. Now, how can I say that? Because the way it works in Escambia County is that first six people on the front row are what we call the presumptive jury. They are the presumptive, unless they're kicked off, they're on. And each lawyer normally, I mean, there's exceptions to every rule, but in your normal garden variety case, each lawyer gets three peremptory challenges. A peremptory challenge could be a gut feeling. If I'm doing the questioning and there's a man on the front row, and while I'm doing my questioning, usually is, you know, 45 minutes. It's not a real long time. We're not out there to bore people to death. We're there to get some information. But if I see out of the corner of my eye that there's a gentleman that looked at his watch four times while I'm asking questions and trying to make my points about the law and whatever, that's telling me there's a guy that he doesn't want to be there. I mean, he's looking at his watch. He can't already. I mean, we haven't even begun the trial yet, and he's looking at his watch. That is somebody that I just don't want that on my jury. They don't seem that interested. I see somebody yawning several times. I don't want a sleepy juror. I want somebody that is focused and is paying attention to the law and the evidence. I may strike them for that. If I ask a question and I see somebody roll their eyes at a question that I think is a good question, I may strike them for that. So the peremptory challenge could be just the lawyer's gut reaction. Meanwhile, there's also called challenges for cause. That's where we're saying, judge, we think that this particular juror, juror number five, cannot be fair. So maybe it'll go down like this. So maybe we're asking these questions, and there's some generic questions. And I'm talking about car wrecks because I am a personal injury lawyer. So if I ask a question, how many of you have ever been in a car wreck, and the hand goes up, how many of you are injured? I was. How many of you are still plagued by those injuries? Well, if they raise their hand, probably the insurance company is not going to want them. They may query, and the insurance lawyer may say, well, sir, given the fact that you've already had a car wreck, did you have a lawyer? Yes, I did. So you were in a car wreck, you had a lawyer, just like Mr. Gross's client here. Do you think you could be fair? Do you think that Mr. Gross has some type of advantage because he appears to be representing someone just like you that was injured in a wreck, that has been injured, that still has problems? That person, if they're honest, may say, well, yeah, I think I would be prone to sympathizing with Mr. Gross's client. Well, then the insurance company is going to ask the judge to strike for cause because he doesn't have an equal footing, and we haven't even started the trial. Meanwhile, if I'm picking and we get Archie Bunker on the front row, and Archie's saying, I don't believe in pain and suffering, you know, life's not a bowl of cherries, things happen, just suck it up and whatever. Well, again, the judge may say, that doesn't sound like a fair juror to me. And so the number of challenges for cause are unlimited. There's no limitation. It's just up to the judge's discretion as to whether or not that particular juror can be fair. Now, just because they've been in a car wreck, you may get someone who says, I was in a car wreck, I was injured, but judge, I think I could be fair. I think I could put that aside. The judge is probably going to let them on the jury, and then the other insurance company will have to use a peremptory challenge. They'll say, wait a second, I don't like this. I don't want somebody sitting on Mr. Gross's jury that's already had a car wreck, that got a lawyer and went through this. They've said they could be fair, but I don't think so, and they use a peremptory. So peremptory are just the lawyer's gut reaction. You only get three, three strikes and you're out, and then the cause. So as so if we had that presumptive six in the front row, if we kick off one of those people in the front row, then we go to the first person on the second row. Then if another person's kicked off, we go to the second person. So I've had plenty of cases where not only does the sixth row, we never get that far. We don't get to the fifth or fourth row. It's rare unless you really get into a volatile case. So sometimes in personal injury cases, we have drunken drivers, and then people go ballistic because most people are anti-drunken driving. So if a drunken driver caused the wreck, that's going to create a lot more talk and emotion, and some people, the judge may strike more for cause, but people may have difficulty being fair when they find out that the defendant was DUI. And so, and most of the personal injury cases I've tried, we certainly get into the second row every time, and we sometimes get into the third row, and I can't remember even getting to the fourth, fifth, or sixth rows. So if you're there and you're sitting in the fourth, sixth row, and you think you've answered, you go, well, why didn't they pick me? I mean, did I say something wrong? Well, first, they didn't get to you. It had nothing to do with you. It had nothing to do with what you said. By process of the elimination, it never got that far. And that's what happens. Now, good lawyers, if you're trained, I mean, and this is the art. This is where the young lawyers, it makes a difference between having a young lawyer pick a jury and someone who's been around the courtroom more. There's a couple little things. So when I was a very green lawyer, when I was a young lawyer, I relied on notes for everything. I had to have my notepad here, notepad there. So even in jury selection, I had these, you know, I had a chart made up, and if Mr. Smith gave me an answer and whatever it is, I'm writing it down the square. That is how not to pick a jury. So what I do now is I have no notes. I don't even have a pen in my hand. I'm empty-handed. I usually have one of my sons will be in the courtroom with me sitting in what we call second chair. That's helping me out. He's got the chart. He's making all these important notes. The reason I don't want to make notes, because if you say something and I look down, if I'm looking down to write on a piece of paper, guess what? I've lost eye contact with the venari. And if the guy next to you rolls his eyes, if the guy next to you chuckles at your answer or frowns at your, shows some what I call nonverbal communication. And there's, in fact, in some of the really big personal injury cases, I'm talking about, you know, maybe wrongful death where you're suing for millions of dollars, some lawyers actually bring in a psychologist. They'll bring a psychologist in the courtroom that are trained. A psychologist, they're called forensic psychologists. They are experts in helping a lawyer read nonverbal communications of potential jurors and things like that. If I'm questioning a lady and she's sort of got her arms across her chest, she's very defensive, very, you know, whatever, that may not be someone that's going to be receptive to my case. Just some nonverbal, what messaging are you getting? Now, sometimes there's head fakes. I mean, I've had some cases where we picked a jury and maybe there was a juror that I liked, and maybe during the trial I liked them, and come to find out by the end that juror was one of the worst jurors for me. So things, you know, aren't always what they are, but you're looking at first impressions. So, you know, as a trial lawyer, we develop first impressions. We develop this sixth sense of how to read people, and that's what we're trying to do in a very short period of time. Some of the jurors are more verbose, and some are not. And usually the ones that get real chatty and very verbose, they're probably not going to be picked, because at some point they're going to say something that one of the sides just doesn't like, and they get too chatty. And also, we're also thinking about personalities, because a lot of times I'm thinking not only about picking six people, I'm also thinking in the back of my head, out of these six people, who is the most likely foreman? And if there's a person who seems to have a very strong personality, maybe he's the CEO of some company and he just has this aura about him, you could think, well, that's going to be a foreman for sure. And if you're, and if you got any kind of inkling that he may be against you, do you really, because when that's the first thing they do when they go back to that jury room to deliberate, the very first thing they do is they pick the foreman. And that means those six people have agreed that you, sir, or you, ma'am, are in control of this situation. And they've kind of elected this person. So they've elevated. So even though that the foreman only gets one vote, they really have more power than that. So I, you would think that a foreman, if the people think enough to elect them a foreman on a close case, they're going to listen to what this foreman says and maybe go the foreman's way. So I'm trying to think way ahead. You know, it's like playing chess. I'm trying to think way ahead to the end game and thinking, okay, who is going to be the foreman? And is this a foreperson that is somebody that I'd be really worried about or not? And you don't always get it right either. So I've been surprised by that sometimes. You have a big burly man that just looks very macho, and then some lady that looked like a librarian pops out, and then she's the foreman, the foreperson. And so I've been surprised. But normally, you know, my instincts most of the time are correct. And you're just – so there's so many things going on in a lawyer's head because you're getting down to six people. I wouldn't call it a jury of your peers. I mean, they always talk about that, and that's probably laughable because it's not – and so anybody that I really like – so if there's somebody that I really, really, really like and what they're saying – if I like them that much, guess what? The insurance company dislikes them equally. They're not dumb either. I mean, the lawyer on the other side, I mean, I have no advantage unless it's a real young lawyer. And if I'm in court with a younger lawyer, maybe I do have an advantage. But at the end of the day, if I like that person that much, then probably the insurance company is going to strike them. And if the insurance company loves what some guy is saying, some, you know, some Archie Bunker type of guy is out there, you could bet your bottom dollar that I'm going to use all my efforts to get him struck for cause or use one of my peremptory challenges on that person. So that's how it kind of works. And then we usually pick seven. So now there's seven picked, but only six jurors decide personal injury cases. And they never tell you, they never tell the seventh person, oh, by the way, you're the alternate, because they want everybody paying attention. So the alternate doesn't even find out that they are the alternate until the bitter end, until the very end. The lawyers know, the judge knows, everybody knows in the courtroom who the alternate is, but the alternate. And then when they go to retire, you know, for the deliberations, the judge will say, Mr. Jones, could you come up here? And Mr. Jones comes up, well, why me? Why are you calling me up here? Mr. Jones, I want to thank you for your service for sitting here, but you were picked as an alternate. Looks like all the six other people have made it to the conclusion of this case. You did not waste your time. It's very important. Had someone gotten sick, you would have filled in, but they didn't get sick. And I am now releasing you of your duties. And usually they're very disappointed because by the end of the trial, they're into it. They made it all the way through. They've heard all the evidence. They've taken notes. They've paid attention. They can't wait to vote. And all of a sudden that's ripped away from them because they find out there's an alternate. But if you'd let them know in advance they were the alternate, then they probably wouldn't pay attention. And so that's how it works, unfortunately. That's kind of it in a nutshell. There's certainly a lot more to it. There's a lot of gamesmanship with this for cause. You know, what the person says, how they say it. Sometimes we actually have to bring the people up in front of the judge quietly because you don't want to make a big ado about some issue. You don't want to embarrass a potential juror. So if there's something, you know, that you could tell the person squeamish about, you bring them up and you whisper before the judge with the court reporter so no one else could hear, and maybe they have something very personal they want to say, And it could be that, you know, that they're someone in their family was killed by a drunken driver, something that was traumatic, and you could tell it was. You could see it on their face. And then we try to make up our mind what to do. And usually in those type of cases, the judge will look up and says, anybody have an objection about dismissing this person for cause? Because they're almost getting teary-eyed, you know, talking about losing their spouse or father in a car wreck due to a drunken driver. And of course, we're going to let that person off. We're not here to torment anybody or cause them any pain. And of course, a lot of people, you know, in the courtroom, the judge will even say, is there anybody who can't serve? This trial is going to begin today. It'll probably end Thursday. Is there anybody out there that just for whatever reasons that's going on in your personal life, just thinks that that you can't serve for whatever? And every now and then somebody will come forward and say, listen, I'm a single mother. I don't have babysitters and this and that and the other. And I, who's going to watch my children if I go to, the judge usually lets those people out. Or if someone's, you know, loved ones in the hospital with major surgery and that you want to be there for them, the judge will probably let them out. But that's what goes on in the courtroom. And so it looks like, again, a new time would fly by. It always does.
We did have a question.
This is Terrence. Oh, okay,
that came in real quick. If somebody's having some health issues, maybe they have to wear an N95 mask due to like a stem cell transplant or something like that. You know, they're worried about infection. That's something that they could definitely get taken care of before the selection process, right, and get that excusal, right?
I would think so. It's up to the clerk. The clerk, they're pretty good about it. A lot of times what they do is they throw your name back in and you maybe pick later, you come back, 6 months or something. But something, if any kind of medical, so the clerks are probably going to do that. And if some people just don't know to call the clerk, any judge would do that. But yeah, because you're even with COVID, it was tough. You know, we got 200 people sitting in a room together. So anyway, this is Terrence Gross. Our office number is 850-434-3333. We have a great website, grossandschuster.com. Our office is located right there in the corner of Palafox and Cervantes. Come visit us, and I'll be back in a couple weeks.
All right. Great to hear from you, sir. Thank you so much for joining us today. This has been the Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. We will be back tomorrow, 9 to 11, every weekday here on News Radio. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Jake Walker. That was Terrence A. Gross. Go to grossandschuster.com.